you are one of us. Your passion is the world of mountain biking, from enduro to gravel races and everything in between. This is Insider MTB, the podcast that takes you behind the handlebars, into the dirt, and behind the scenes of the mountain biking world. And now your host, Austin White.
All right, you guys, episode 17. It's been a little bit for me. As you guys can see, if you're watching right now, and anyone that's watching this one, Spencer's a little bit out right now. He is getting his stuff ready for a day in the dirt coming up. Big moto guy now, making his return to do some moto stuff from the moto industry. But he's doing some riding today and working on his bikes and stuff like that. So we had a little scheduling thing, but it's all good. We got a guest coming up today for you. I'm going to intro it in for a little bit. We are live. So yeah, if you guys do watch us or listen to us post archive stuff, which most of this stuff is just, if you are subscribed to our YouTube channel, you can watch us live on occasion. We do put it up. We've had technical difficulties, I know, for that in the past. Yeah. So you can watch us live. In the past, we've had some issues with this stuff, but it looks like this software has kind of gotten this stuff figured out. And, so we're going to be doing some more live ones. The best way to kind of get in on the live stuff is you just subscribe to us on YouTube, and grabbing it that way seems to be the easiest way. We do post it every once in a while through our Instagram stories to kind of get there. But until we kind of can set on a maybe like twice a month or once a month or Mondays or whatever we can set for doing this, it's just going to be a little bit random on some of those things. We do have a lot coming up for 2025 going on with just more than this podcast. There's going to be some new stuff. So we just redid the website. And if you do head over to the website, you can see a lot of the, a little bit of what we have coming for 2025. We still are finalizing a bunch of stuff and hopefully can announce it basically in January, but we're going to be doing some more live stream. And when I'm saying live stream, we're going to be broadcasting mountain bike racing and all other cycling racing. So we're going to kind of give them a little bit of a channel and a home for people to go to and watch those type of things. And it will be free. So I am working behind the scenes to make a lot of that happen and hopefully can have some more progress updates on that. But so far we have two big races set up for 2025. So you'll be able to not only listen to our janky podcast that I have, and you will also be able to come to the YouTube channel and watch free live streams of the biggest races in the United States for cycling. So yeah, I'm just kind of working behind the scenes on that. And then there's some other stuff kind of behind the scenes for that that is coming up. But mainly me just basically digging into seeing a bigger avenue for that type of stuff. So I think that it'll be a little bit unique, and a lot of it hasn't been done in the US. So I really hope to help a lot of these US athletes and riders and get them a lot of coverage and a lot of uniqueness to all that type of stuff. But yeah, so I'll table that for now because we have a lot more coming that I'd like to like have like a real announcement and maybe just like a separate podcast, just diving into a bunch of the 2025 stuff, especially when I have a lot more things sealed up. So I'll just give a couple hints. I mean, you can see if you're watching us on YouTube right now that our guest has probably one of the coolest wiener dogs in the in the industry, maybe dogs in general. And yeah, if you can make a guess to that, he will be joining us here in probably like 5 minutes or so. But yeah, just kind of maybe dig into a little bit where we left off last time, just talking about the UCI and the points and a little bit of Rampage and post-Rampage drama a little bit. I'm sure a lot of you guys have seen some of the stuff about lines that couldn't be done or no one could replicate. And then all of a sudden we have a few weeks later, we're doing some videos of people doing those on some interesting bikes. And I know it caused some drama. We did have some other podcasts that we were recording up at Hard Mountain Bike and at the Hard Mountain Bike League thing. And yeah, those ones just aren't going to make it. We got, we were drinking a little bit too much and got a little bit too far. So those will be saved in some secret archive files that we'll maybe one day talk to some people to release. But yeah, but breaking that down, I'm sure a lot of you have seen this now, but people were doing some stuff at Red Bull Rampage that was uniquely hard to do and maybe controversy for the drama of the judging. And some of those people said they couldn't be done, and that's why they judged and couldn't believe they got judged that way, but got worse points. And then someone else went out and did it like on a weekday, just a regular rider. So yeah, kind of interesting for sure to be in the room when some of those Rebel Rampage athletes were where I was at, and they were getting some phone calls and just hearing the behind the scenes of all that. And I think even some people that are athletes in it, and then even surrounding that, just understanding a little bit more from even our comments before, just it's a lot of these athletes seem to be kind of over this, I would say maybe gravity athletes, and I'm not speaking for them, but just kind of my understanding from having conversations with them kind of was they're in this unique area of like, they kind of don't like the direction of everything that's going. And that kind of loops in from enduro to a little bit of downhill with the new UCI rules to slalom, to pump track, to rampage and stuff like that. But yeah, they kind of like, they work their ass off to get to a certain level and then see it kind of maybe not make as much or someone else make more or this and that. So I know that they're going through some changes in that with those athletes and things like that. So I would suspect probably in these next few years, hopefully to see some different stuff. And that's why you do see this whole new hard mountain bike league that Braden and, you know, his group of friends are kind of putting out. Cause it seems like there is a, I don't know how to say it best, like a will to want more or a different way of how things are kind of ran. I was up there when they did their test event, if that's maybe the best way to call it, but like, yeah, them testing, getting, you know, content and working towards, with the riders to find a future and stuff like that. And, yeah, they seemed, that was kind of the topic of conversation and like, how could we better work with making it more suitable for the athletes, if that kind of makes sense. And I think a lot of these athletes maybe feel that events or other people maybe, I don't know how to explain it the best, but like have taken advantage of them and they kind of want to get to a different level of that. Maybe, and that's what my feeling of what it was talking to all them, you know, I'm not speaking for them. They all have, I'm sure, you know, what they want to say on stuff, but yeah, it seems like they're trying to revamp the system, if maybe that's the best way to put it. But yeah, so they're all working on that. And I think that's what Hard Mountain Bike League is probably going to be best known for, is working towards building something better for the athletes, unlike what it is, not unlike now, because some events are great, but then there is some, like what we've learned, like with Keegan and racing, that the payouts aren't as great as maybe we think that they deserve, right? So it does make things a little bit unique in that area. So yeah, there is a lot to work out on that end. And I was there helping them, talking about helping with some live stream questions and a little bit of fielding some questions, because I come from a background of putting on and promoting large scale events outside of cycling and from motocross, and just have a pretty large background in that and kind of just helping them with some stuff and everything like that. But hopefully it seems like they've got their dates figured out and some futures going on. So I really hope that Braden and his team of guys over there will be able to put together something great that we'll see for the future of cycling and maybe that gravity area of these unique athletes. Cause there is a lot of those unique athletes that have these great talents on bikes, but it's like, they're multifaceted because they have to be that way. And hopefully hard mountain bike maybe kind of slims and narrows that window, so those guys are like not as spread out maybe. And then they're all just competing in one. I don't know. I can tell you this from making events, that is a lot of an uphill battle, and they definitely got some work to do with getting in there and getting athletes and doing some cool stuff. But they have a really cool little course that they have with up and then the three downs. So yeah, if you guys haven't checked it out, I definitely recommend hitting up Pink Bike or Vital and seeing a little bit of behind the scenes and kind of what they're offering and all the stuff, because it's pretty cool. Just being at that, what they did in their little facility area there, I guess you could say, and what it was. So yeah. Yeah, that was kind of a mouthful, and definitely being first podcast just alone is a little rough, but yeah, I'm glad that everyone's listened this far, and cool. So we got a first guest or only guest coming up for us, and let me change a few little things here so I don't bog it down. Pause this, and I'm totally going to butcher his name. 100% going to butcher his name. I already know it. We already went over it, but first off, why didn't they just name you Alex? I don't know why it had to go with Alexi. And then Vermulin?
It's not bad. Not bad.
Okay.
I'll take it.
Yeah. We'll call you the wiener dog guy. That's what I was kind of calling you earlier. The wiener dog guy.
Everyone knows me as that anyway. My true identity. Really?
Is that you? I mean, how many followers does he have on Instagram?
We don't work at it, and he has like 10K.
Shut up.
We were in Bentonville, and I was laughing. This dad came over. Oh, we just got a wiener dog, and my wife's kind of an influencer. It'd be really cool. She can post about your dog. And he like got on and then like stopped talking about it. And I went back and looked. She followed him, and she had less followers than Willie. And I was like, that's embarrassing.
No way. Yeah. Dude, your wiener dog has more followers than a lot of influencers, even some like top athletes in different segments of cycling.
This is my retirement plan, Austin. I got to have somewhere to go. Cycling doesn't last forever.
Live off the dog. Wow. Are you gonna make him into a show dog, or is it just always going to be this influencer hanging off of a backpack somewhere?
I don't know.
As he's in the background sleeping.
I think you could do a whole series on just like, where is Willie today? There's this, actually, you should be the guy to talk to. I think I'm going to do a month this coming year of 24 hours a day Willie live cam. Just sitting there.
Yes.
And he just has this perch in the new house. And so there's going to be a camera there. And if you see him, you can send him a treat, or you can...
Is he totally napping in the background?
Yeah. He's loafing.
Loafing. What a life. What a... Wow.
Yeah, he'll probably bark once throughout the interview, but...
Really? So yeah. He's a barker? Got a little mouth on him?
Yeah. If he doesn't like the person coming in, if he doesn't recognize the face, he'll give you a good little bark.
How old is he?
Like 5 and a half.
Oh, okay. So... I mean, maybe he's in the prime of his life right now a little bit, right? Like,
yeah,
some would say, you know, like, okay, so let's back it up a little bit. I met you on a Canyon photo shoot when you used to be a Canyon athlete. Then now you've just left us. I don't shoot for the brands you're with now, but the brands that you were previously with, we could have been friends, you know?
Yep.
I felt it. Camped out Colorado. You showed me your extreme mountain bike skills at that time.
We were shooting bike I probably should not have ever been on.
Oh, you were so perfect for it. Stop it. At that time, there was no Lifetime series, right? No.
Was it like? Yeah, no Lifetime series. I mean, we just gotten through COVID. I think everyone's trying to figure out what was happening. But yeah. I didn't know where I was going.
Yeah, what were you? I mean, what athlete? Because you remember you telling me like, no, I'm not a mountain biker. And that's when I learned, didn't you? That's when we had the deep conversations about Lance and doping. Yeah. And, you know, you were just telling me how much you just dope every single day. That's the only way you can be an athlete as a cyclist. No, I'm kidding you guys. But yeah, like talk a little bit about that time. And because you were also going for the Grand Tour, right? And then,
yeah,
I don't know.
I mean, I think every year I feel like the older you get, the more the idea of why something changes. But as far as closely as I can remember it, just I got to that top level of road cycling. I knew what I wanted to be, but I didn't enjoy everything I was doing. And I was just like, okay, now I'm going to go back and be a World Cup mountain biker. Came back to the U.S., realized this is not for me. I can't do this. I can't learn this in enough time to be good enough. And then from there, I think it just kind of got lucky in the time that cycling in the U.S. was reshaping. So, and just jump straight into what I think fit half of me really well, and half of it had to be spent on, you know, learning a little bit of skill to keep up with Keegan.
So like at that time, everyone, or maybe a little bit after that time, Lifetime comes out with the series, or I don't, the conglomerate of whatever it is at that time. It was and it even still says today it's a gravel series, right? It's not though, like, and how does that affect you a little bit? Like, would you rather it be more gravel or no?
No, it's funny. So yeah, I mean, it was directly after that Lifetime announced the Grand Prix 2022, was the first year. It definitely skews gravel, I think, in terms that, like, most of us also who go out mountain bike for fun, you'd never call Schwamigan or Leadville, two of the mountain bike races, like pure mountain bike races. You could theoretically, yeah, if you're just out riding, I could enjoy doing those on a gravel bike, which is like makes it not a mountain bike race. But that being said, I think there's elements to it where I learned really quickly, like, if you don't have mountain bike skills, you won't exist at the front of mountain bike races. Because even if it's okay, this could be a lot more technical, but there's three downhill sections, like, you have to keep up with Keegan and Russell and all the guys who came with a mountain bike background, and then they have to keep up on the gravel side. And so it's kind of forced everyone to raise their game, I think. And without, if it didn't have any mountain bike, I don't think it'd be as interesting as it is.
Yeah. And I mean, so when you were growing up, I guess you could say, was Tour of California great or not good? Or what was it at that time then? Or was it something you inspired, or was it kind of at the end of its life?
No, Tour of California was really big growing up. I was really, really, I really, really enjoyed doing it. I got to do it 2 years in a row before it left. I think there's a couple races that stick out to me. For everyone, I think the Tour is the first thing you see on TV, and you just you glamorize it. Past that, I honestly just like, there's a lot of racing over in Europe that I just loved watching. I love that gladiator style of some of the classics that, like, I never did and didn't really want to do. But, you know, you saw George Hincapie come out in like 2005 Roubaix, just like bikes wrecked, faces bloody, like the gladiator force. I will always say this, Unbound isn't the coolest race all the time for me.
But if it kind of is a Roubaix, right?
And if the years where it's muddy, I think it's the coolest thing in the calendar, because it's
you're the only one saying, and you and Keegan are the only one saying that.
But it's epic, and it's like gladiator style. And you feel enough, like, by the end, you're like, you've chafed and rubbed so, like, your body's just not, it's not made for that. Like, 2022 was so insane and Unbound. You finish and like, I look like an elephant. Like, the it's like dried on my face. It's So I don't know. I think a lot of it was Tour of California, like anything in the US, but other than that, it was just Europe. I loved anything that made cycling out to be this really hard, tough thing that people couldn't.
And you went over there pretty young though, right?
16.
Okay. Wow. So, and I mean, even at the, hold on. So how old are you?
Turned 30 this year.
Oh, wow. Young buck.
I'm getting old.
But you obviously at 16, did you even have a cell phone? What was even going on?
My parents bought me an iPad to FaceTime. That was like just as FaceTime was coming around.
Yes. So you went over there at 16, not like a 16 I feel like would go down. Like you could survive it over there at 16 now, right? I'm saying by that is just the language barrier for the translator, the dollar working across everything, and it was easier, right? So what the fuck, man? Why'd you want to go at 16? Like, it was that much of a chase? Or, and you're saying you wanted to go to Europe, or you wanted to be a great cyclist in Europe?
Europe. Everything about it at that time, like when you're a high schooler, at least for me, because I have a lot of parents asking me these questions with their kids, like, oh, how did you become pro? Like, you don't have to push your kid. Like, it wasn't sacrifices. My mom was like, oh, you're going to miss homecoming. I was like, that's sick. Like, going to Spain. Like, and it,
I get that.
Yeah. So there was just like this, I think I enjoyed cycling. Like at that time I was working hard and getting better. So the progression was easy. But then like the cherry on top was just being able to travel anywhere and everywhere for free. I mean, not for free, but for free.
And everything's pretty much within 8 hours in a sense, right? Like that you want to go to.
Yeah. It kind of changed year to year, but my first couple of years we were based like just outside Brussels and yeah, you could pretty much go anywhere from there. You're in France, Italy, Spain. And like I remember going over my parents, like the first time they gave me 500 euro as like just spending money for fun. And they got it out and I had all this colorful Monopoly money. And I'm like over there, I remember, so kermesses are the big thing over there. These almost like circuit races in the US would be the greatest example, but it's gladiators for juniors. There's betting boards, there's dried fish, like... And I had just won the national championships and I'm over there, the whole national team, best six guys in the US. And we start this race, probably like, I don't know, let's say 5 mile laps. Not one rider on the national team made it through the first three laps.
because it was,
it's a different style of racing. It's like, it's elbows, it's cursing, it's like taking any line that exists through the gutter. Like,
no way, really.
It's insane. And you learn, and by the end of like, I think 2-3 weeks later, we did three of those races a week. I like caught on, and that was like my goal. I left Europe with, I think, like 1200 euro as opposed to spending the 500.
No just like, way, like, really?
There's like, if you get good enough, there's like betting boards on you. And it's a crazy, it's like, you understand why cycling's big in Europe when you go over for the junior stuff.
Do you, what, I mean, so for me, it's kind of weird as an American just being this like, I mean, not cycling didn't get invented here, but mountain bikes did.
No.
Why is it bigger over there? But it kind of just, do you think it's because that, you know, more people just actually genuinely understand bikes because you ride them to work and lifestyle is a bike?
Yeah, I think right now it is definitely culture. You have more people riding bikes, they'll want to understand it. But also I think a lot of it is just education. It's really hard in our daily lives to understand or want to care about a race that just inconveniences you. And that's what happens with most bike races in the US. I think that's why gravel and mountain biking has been better in the US, because we don't inconvenience people for the most part. So it's trying to figure out, how do you fit that into a place that's not, doesn't know bikes, you know? It's tough.
Yeah, that makes sense. That it's just always uniquely interesting that they have the World Cups, the best mountain bike, the best cycling, the best everything, roadside, whatever. Yeah. But they have like the best of that. I mean, I guess maybe now I would almost say we have the best gravel guys.
Yeah, it's hard because that fight hasn't happened yet. But I mean, I want to say so. Like, one of my big goals with Keegan before we get old and gray and pass out is I've constantly told him, I was like, dude, you tell me the year, I'll put everything into working my ass off for you or for me to go win worlds. Like, let's go prove that the US actually has the best athletes.
Yeah.
We did it 2 years ago, but not.
Yeah, really. But it was kind of road more than anything, right?
Yeah, and it was just kind of half-assed. We went over last minute and there wasn't anything planned. Well, you got to plan something like that out and like find guys who want to. There's road tactics to it. Gravel's always going to have that if you race Europeans. So you have to find 4 or 5 guys who understand like their job is the first 25 miles. Their job is the first 35. You know, like that's how road cycling works, is you have a job, and if you do your job, that's great. If you don't, then you failed. And some people, they have to be to the end and work. Some people have to get bottles. Like, that's how it works best.
Sorry, McTubbin, you know?
Tobin can come. Just
Tobin can come. Yeah, he's a great wingman. What are you talking about?
Best wingman and the vibe master.
Yeah, so then, I mean, I guess that leads me to that. Like, who is your, you don't have a wingman in the Lifetime Series or what? Like, Tobin.
I got Willie, dude. You don't see him on my back every race? Why do you think Keegan's only beating me because I have Willie on my back? That's the only reason.
I fucking get it. I get it. I mean, it's a camel back, but it's actually a doggy back.
Yeah. No, I've played around, like, trying to bring in some road friends to come mess with Keegan and Tobin at races like Unbound or Big Sugar.
Yeah.
But it's hard. You got to fit it all together.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, I'm not going to say that's why he only wins, but, or whatever, but like, that is a vital piece of a puzzle that helps with this series, right?
Yeah. I don't want to take anything away from either of those guys because I love both of them. Tobin is very strong. Keegan can do it himself, but there's a mental factor of just knowing someone has your back when you look back, or even if Tobin's struggling at, like, I saw a couple times at Big Sugar, he was just there, and you could see Keegan's happy he's there. I think it's just nice to know someone's there for a wheel, for anything else you might need. And I also think that's where gravel should go. I think that's what people want to see. They want to see that, like, the
sellout.
They're
going to see a teammate things, right?
It's more exciting.
It is.
Yeah. It's like, I
think it's cool.
The things I remember about Lance, all his negativity, was the teammate, like the lead out into a climb. It's epic, right? It just slowly ramps up, and there's, you saw 8 postal guys in a line, and then slowly, and it was always that game of, are there more guys left working than our teammates behind? And that's, I think that's really cool in gravel if you start to get that, because numbers, you know, let's say Keegan is the strongest, right? So if, let's say you have Keegan. You start throwing 2 medium strong guys, if they know how to race tactically, they can take Keegan on a certain day.
So has this conversation been brought up with Lifetime? Are they thinking about rules for this or letting it happen? What do you think?
I think I keep saying this, and this is probably not the best thing to say on a podcast, but who cares? I'm 30.
No, we don't have any listeners. Do not worry.
I'm on my retirement path anyway.
You got the pup.
I think gravel will be a sport where we'll have millionaires in 5 years, or it won't exist as a professional sport.
I kind of think that too.
And it's because it has to be built in a slow nature. Like, I don't think Lifetime putting in rules for teammates or for amount of money teams need is the right choice right now. But I think slowly bringing the number of guys in the Grand Prix down to where it's all even and everyone has, you know, not being paid the same, but everyone has the same support structure at the races. And then creating a development pathway or a baby Lifetime behind it and then growing the whole sport. Lifetime changed racing in the US, in my opinion. And I think three years ago, you had a lot of people that are like, eh, I don't know about this. We don't want Lifetime to come in and ruin this sport we have. It wasn't a sport at that time.
It is always that though, right?
And I think now you can't find a company that's not stoked. And I've heard there's a lot of companies that, you know, want to sign younger athletes saying, we'll pay you more if you get into the Grand Prix because there's such a value on it.
Yeah. But I mean, are they uniquely are they guiding the sport of gravel in this better direction with some rules and like fair fighting? I mean, I know the biggest controversy is the women's and the men's when they take off, but minus that, like, are they putting out these like, hey man, this guy cut or whatever, you helped, I don't know, right? Are they,
I think,
because what is the rule book exactly? Because it's not USA Cycling rule book, so what is it?
What's interesting right now is most of like a 6 or 7 race series, it changes race to race.
Okay.
Which is like,
that's fucking outlaw shit right there.
Crazy. Yeah. I mean, there's races where you can take a wheel from the feed zone. There's races where you can't. And I think why? That is a great question. We should really but it comes from, I think the way they've taken over the races they have. They've left them as they were. So this first year is this next year in 2025 is the first year we're going to have payment at every race, which will be
okay. Because that was a big subject I got brought up on the podcast. Yeah. Like, I could not believe that there was fucking no money.
It was crazy. I mean, it was hard to complain, at least for me, because for the first time, like, I think Kiki would say this too. Like, we were making like livings racing bikes in the U.S., which when I grew up, that wasn't the case for domestic riders. You weren't making, you were making 25, 30 grand if you were good, but like you weren't making a living. Like,
I
bought a house because I raced my bike in the US. And
it's because of the pup.
It's, there we go. But I think you have to find where that balance lies, right? And so Lifetime was figuring out like eventually they're going to have to, but for the last 2-3 years, all these Grand Prix races, you could win like Schwamigen, for example. They've just been around for 34 years.
Has it really?
Yeah. And so it's at 1.5 hour, like theoretically compared to Unbound in Leadville, a nothing race, right? Even though it's my favorite race of the series.
It paid out
$2,500 and Leadville paid out zero and Unbound paid out zero.
And you die at both of those.
Yeah.
Like, so die.
It really wasn't, it was just as what was sitting there when they bought the race and they just left it. So, you know, like Sea Otter, you'd be like, oh, cool, great start, $500 for the win. You know, this is almost demeaning to give my
it is. It's fucking crazy to me. I actually had a conversation about this with someone's agent. Let's just go with that. And just talking about it, because I know what I have a pretty generally good idea of what like a domestic or not a domestic, a global traveling. I'm trying to do this without saying a name. Global traveling. People that ride in the Olympics on XC for us. How about that? Let's go with that. What they make from their teams. And I was like, okay, that's a pretty fair, pretty good out pay, right? And then I was like, dude, how much does your guy make? I mean, there's no way he's barely making 100. And then I got told and I was like, okay, I'm actually very surprised right now. Yeah. And him telling me that, I was like, but it didn't make sense to me. But it sounds like the back end pay to you guys is where it's at right now, right? Like they want us, one of your sponsors pays you but win bonuses instead of the race actually paying you, right?
And I think it has to switch a little bit back toward the middle. Like I think the pandemic.
Because the dangers of it, the way it is right now is it's almost like, how do you get fresh talent in?
You can't. And that's the thing. Right now, theoretically, every company, name it Santa Cruz, Envy, Cannondale, whatever you want to say, I think they have enough budget to sponsor one male and one female. Like that are good. And then you have to like, hey, we can like bring in new development riders, but they don't have cash to pay people beneath that.
Yeah.
And yeah,
maybe I would say the series or whatever the this that it's a seasoned like athlete. You're not sending a 21-year-old out there and expecting him to just fucking tear someone's roof off at Unbound, you know?
Yeah.
So how do you do that?
I think you have to take this, and this is, again, maybe controversial, but I think you have to take from the middle. You got to take a bunch of guys who are in the Grand Prix right now that deserve to race those races, but maybe not be in an F1 type series. I'm going to stop using air quotes because I hate air quotes. In an F1 type series, a very like strict, like if you're out, you're out. And I think you got to move that middle section back to development.
Yeah.
And support.
You got to make the sport healthy.
Yeah. And that true, I think we'll see that if in the next 2 or 3 years when somebody wins a Grand Prix race that's under 25.
Yeah,
and I don't know where that's coming though, because right now
I don't know where that's coming.
It's easy to say that somebody's won most of Grand Prix races because Keegan's won most of them, but you can literally count on one hand. There's 5 guys who have won Grand Prix races in the last 3 years.
Which is kind of
insane.
I mean, from a spectator's standpoint, I don't want that. I want to see a new winner almost every weekend.
Yep.
You know, there's a reason. And me and Keegan go way back. I like him. But it's like, damn, dude, like maybe chill a little bit. Like the Unbound thing probably was the best thing for the sport, which is horrible to say.
No, and I told Keegan, I was like, dude, I was like, there's a pressure on my shoulders, in my opinion. Like I was like, I feel like I need to beat you at the Grand Prix, because if you leave, it's done. Whoever wins next doesn't matter.
It is kind of true.
It's like this, he invalidates everything. And I think what's hard for me is like, I know how hard Keegan works. He outworks everybody who's doing the races right now.
It's not that he doesn't deserve it.
No.
We're not saying that.
It's just the depth of gravel isn't there yet to be able to, like I would say on a given weekend, and again, try not to like shit on anybody's head, but like we have maybe 6 guys who can win a race on a given weekend. And that is like if luck flies their way, you know?
Yeah.
And that's, you need to grow that to like 10 or 15 to start having people like, oh shit, that person can't go up the road and make mistakes. Yeah. So it's coming, but I mean, I think,
Did they announce what they are going to make the purses per race, or is it going to be spread out? Not a series bonus?
I think it's $5,000 for a win all across the board.
Okay, so but then still the same money on top.
A little less. I think it's $20,000 to win as opposed to $30,000.
Okay.
So it changes. Wow. I think it changed in the right way right now. They brought more money in. I think there's $380,000 in total as opposed to $300,000. Mm-hmm. And originally in the first year was $250,000. But I think honestly, like where I keep going, because I've had a lot of conversations with the guys that I think control this, Lachlan and Russell and Keegan, is lifetime as a promoter of a race, I really enjoy, because there's no vanity to it, right? As it's not so-and-so specific job to make the series successful. It's a business as a whole. And we're a tiny, tiny facet of that business. Like Lifetime, the gym company, is a $3 billion company. We are so infinitesimally small, the endurance sport side of that. And so if we can find a way to eventually provide value, right? That entertainment grows enough where there's a distribution, right? That is where I think everyone gets paid off. And that's where I think money will come for everybody. But it can't just put your hand up and say, because so-and-so company has billions of dollars that needs to go to athletes. That's not how that works. And I think that's what people think. They want to associate a multi-billion dollar company with this, just give more money. But it's a publicly traded company. What happens when someone goes online and says, like, why is there $500,000 going here?
Well, I wonder, has that question been brought up yet?
Probably.
It has to be.
Because
how much did it cost him to buy all these and do this stuff?
Yeah. So, and I think it's the way, right? We go through these waves, and right now is the hardest time in any niche sport, I think, that pendulum swinging back toward companies being like, oh, we want to quantify everything, and swinging back toward Google Ads and all these things that are not, I don't think, actually sell products. They introduce people to products. I don't think they sell products. And I think that's the value of gravel compared to the road or mountain biking right now, is it's so in touch with people. When I won Big Sugar, this is the first time I was a critic all the time of saying, in my time in gravel, we will never see or feel a legacy of the sport. There's no history. There's no special version of it. Like you grew up in cycling. You're like, oh, this race is 120 years old. Wow.
Yeah.
gravel, when I won Big Sugar, you finished and people were doing the shorter races, stopping when they saw the helicopter and sitting down and eating snacks. And like, they were
really,
they were like picking a place to watch the pros pass.
No way.
And I was like, that is, you cannot
connect. Cool.
You cannot connect more with the customer at all. And yeah. Someone who wants to be involved in the sport and care, it is the first way I realized like they in turn are buying a ticket to the stadium. It's different. Yeah. But they're buying, they're spending $110 to go race the 25 or the 50 or the 100. And then they're getting off
pulling
their bike
over to watch you guys come by
to stop to watch us pass. And they're getting their phones out and they're posting about it. And if you can grow that and grow the education or the excitement of someone like realizing how fast we pass compared to them or vice versa, the sport doesn't need to be, I've always said this, like the sport's never going to be football or basketball or golf, right? But
no.
It should be comparable to skiing. Or I even think we talked about it when I first met you with motocross, right? Like there's so many things cycling has done so poorly in the way it's built that like, how do we have
high school
leagues?
You guys don't
care
about racing. It's quite interesting. Except for in Europe, obviously road has got a unique grab on it and then a little bit of XC, but, and downhill. Nope. The racing aspect and getting the athletes to understand that in America seems to be a very, I don't know what happened, why, or where this avenue went, but like, yeah.
We're just steering off in the wrong direction half the time.
For sure. So then that being said, do you think, I mean, okay, I know in the past when they've gone to live stream Unbound, and they obviously had difficulties the first year with getting it as a great picture, but the second year they had a pretty good picture of it with Flo. My question to you is, did you ever watch it? Could you sit down and watch for 8 hours? As I mean, it's kind of fucking boring at some moments, right?
It's like, really fucking boring. I think, I mean, and
what do we do about that?
I'll do the same thing. Like I chimed in, you know what I mean? Like, and this is no knock on Gravel Worlds. The first ones to like live stream the whole fucking 150 mile event, right? But I think throughout the day I tuned in like 8 times, but every time I couldn't tell what was different, who we were watching, how we were watching it, like
what happened.
Yeah. You're like, okay, it's a different group. There's 16 different guys that I haven't seen all day.
Yeah.
And so that's not the live stream's fault. That's putting up the money to do it. It's, I really think it's that's not interesting to people. You have to find a way to encompass. If you want to go back, like even from the tour, I feel like I watch extended highlights. And if I thought the stage was super interesting, or I know the stage is going to be interesting, if it's a hilltop finish or a time trial.
But they're a lot shorter, to be fair. Right?
A lot shorter. But even if they say I watch the, you know, 30-minute highlights, and if I'm like, wow, that was really cool, I'll go back and watch the full thing on a trainer or something.
Yeah.
So it's like, that's the secondary option. It's not something I need or want or crave every night. And so I think Lifetime did a good job. I think content has transformed. I think every year it's changed, but
well,
I think
that series is great. And you guys have done something I would say maybe in cycling hasn't been done.
Yeah.
Maybe it is the Netflix F1 version of it, you know?
Right. But I think it has to change. And I wish there was more money to say both of the ways they did it the last couple of years could happen, in my opinion. I wish there was still a
series.
Would
it be like maybe X amount, like there's a payout for every 50 miles, like who's ever in the lead? I mean, that would make it pretty competitive, right?
They have to start doing something like that, or just, you know, a preem like crits, right? There's $1,000 preem on the line, because that's also for the guys who aren't in, like that's the thing with the Grand Prix the last 2 years. I've been so curious as to why, maybe it's just strength, but like guys who are in 17th and you only pay it to top 10 overall aren't throwing Hail Marys every race.
Yeah.
Like if that was me and that was me this year, it's why I threw the Big Sugar. I never imagined in a million years I just had a crazy year with my brother's wedding and Sophie's Olympics, but like I was in 16th overall going into Big Sugar. I was like, what am I doing here? We're not going to sit in the race this whole day and just like wait for Keegan to attack.
Yeah.
And that's like, I feel like people, I don't want to like harp on people, but I'm like, you're in 21st. We're not racing the same race right now. Like,
for sure.
Go.
Yeah, yeah.
Like throw Hail Marys every chance you get. When you get Brock back, go.
Well, do you think, I mean, obviously in the tour, we see that the team, you trade off, you get, that's your moment of TV coverage, blah, blah, blah. Maybe this turns to that. I mean, I don't know what you've heard, but I've heard that whispers of Red Bull and doing Lifetime next year. I don't know how true it is.
I hope it's true. I mean, I think for me, I think it's also mutually beneficial, which isn't always the case. like Red Bull lost a big market share when they lost the World Cups. And yeah. I think there's a place where this, they have the know-how to grow this into something, and the backing is already there. They don't have to come in and spend millions. They have to come in and spend hundreds of thousands to stream it.
Well, I got told that they were at a different number, but on some stuff for sure. But I think
you know more than me in that category.
I would say the conversations that I've had with people that hearing it, I think maybe it, I don't, they, okay, it's a million a race they wanted to spend. Wow. And I was like, well, I can tell you that's going to fail because there's no way you could quantify X amount. Let's just say five of them they did, four yeah. of them, three of them at $3 million that they're going to get that in viewership back from a gravel race. I hate to say it. Yeah. I'm not, but it's very tough. And maybe is it because Flow failed to execute properly or someone else? I don't really know. It's a bummer.
Yeah. I mean, I hate pointing fingers, but Flow fucked this up.
I can tell you more from the back end because I was...
I'm sure.
I do stuff with Flow. But yeah, there was people in certain positions and they're no longer in those certain positions or fired. And yeah.
It was just hard because I also think as a cyclist, this is the same as like when COVID was hitting and it was just like a fire sale for bikes. I felt like I looked at like the way Flow had written things and I was like, they know that's yeah. impossible for them, right? That's an impossible contract.
Yeah. But not getting me in too much hot water. They maybe we'll have a separate time to talk about that on the back end. But I can tell you some crazy shit for sure. It's when I got the call to save what I was kind of told to save the series and do stuff with the things, I was like, nah, dude, you guys fucked up.
Yeah.
You guys fucked up, dude. Way too hard. I don't even know. I'm surprised people aren't fucking going to murder you right now, for sure.
Well, and I think that was the hardest part is the Grand Prix was such a new novel thing and so exciting that like,
yeah.
And I was promoting it, right? As an athlete, you're so stoked to have something that like has viewership and has a non-endemic sponsor like Mazda at the front was a massive yeah. deal. Like I will forever, if I ever go and like think about buying a car, I'll think about a Mazda because of that, because they brought cycling into a different sphere that it hasn't been through since Lance. Just yeah. the honest truth. And so I was like out there being like, you guys are going to be live streamed here, buy an account. It'll be great. Flow didn't help out for anybody, right? My fucking whole family bought accounts, my everybody, right? To watch, right? Because they haven't been able to watch US racing.
Yeah.
And then when you're in Europe, my whole,
and then they have yeah. three cameras out there providing coverage to the whole thing. Yeah. Hey, I'll tell you how much the budget was for the first one off the record later, but
I could venture a guess. I would guess it's around 30 grand. Anyway.
I wish it was 30 grand.
Oh God.
They burned the whole budget at round one. So anyway. Yeah, but I do kind of wonder that like if you are going to implement live streams, TV, broadcast, whatever it is there going to have to be a little bit of a neat special hitch to it to get it to be watchable or viewable or exciting, right? Like restack them up like NASCAR. Let's do something here, you know?
I also think, question to you, what I'm the podcaster now, can I have the mic for a second? No, all results aside, I love the Tyson Paul fight. Results aside, I love the theatrics of that stuff sometimes.
For sure.
The amount of people, like, first off, laughing people spent $2 million to sit.
The buildup is yeah. amazing.
I mean, we have to give credit to Jake and Tyson, the way they built it up. Because there's sure. moments where anyone could watch any faction of that. And if you forget Tyson's 58 and you forget Jake's a YouTuber, you can believe they're going to kill each other.
Yes.
And I love that. And so part of me is like, I talked to Keegan and my friend who does all my filming, Avery, about this a lot, but I was like, whatever live stream comes in, we need like a true pro press panel where you can like sock on each other, like real questions. Like you want to give me a mic and have me like, I'll make fun of Keegan. You can make fun of me.
I will tell you this. You all are some sensitive motherfuckers.
That's
okay.
Fine.
Let me just get this straight because there is, I starting this podcast, I had a lot of friends. Okay. And I have a lot of friends that don't want to go on because they don't want to stir up the thing. I've kind of found that out in cycling that you guys, and maybe because I feel like you're more race oriented. And I would say some of these gravity athletes that aren't as race oriented and just want to, you know, what's up.
Yeah.
They don't want to talk shit. They don't want, and I don't call it talking shit. I can tell you on the back end, I'm sure you've seen it too. The stir up of just saying like, oh, I'm going to fucking beat that guy will make your Instagram blow up or social or something.
Yeah. I also just like, it's not talking shit. Like I can go, I will go to tell, to, if someone cuts me off in the race,
it isn't talking shit. That is, but that's how they, how people think it's perceived. And it's so, not that.
And I think it's a lack of respect. I think gravel, because it's so small right now. Also like the guys I would make fun of, I would go and call after and invite them over for dinner. You know, you're, yes, you're close enough that it's easy to like make fun of someone. Like I know, like, I can guess exactly what Russell and Keegan would make fun of me for. Not being able to ride a bike downhill and constantly doing way too much.
I make fun of you for that. Yeah. So,
but I constantly mean, do, you still made me look good on camera, so joke's on you. I looked good on that shoot.
Hey, but only climbing shots in. No, but there is – there, and so and this is what draws me to cycling, because motocross is going through a little bit of that. And it's always gone through that identity, not identity crisis, but the riders are very scared. They get punished for saying the truth. Oh, dude, my bike fucking sucked this weekend. Yeah. Or, oh man, my team wasn't on it. They get punished for that. So then you get the generic answers like blah, 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 blah. And you guys are all pretty rad to work with. And you guys are willing to kind of say it. And maybe you guys have watched too much Supercross and you guys are worried or something. I don't really know, but I have noticed within starting this podcast, I definitely have friends that were like a hard no of coming on to talk the I don't even want the locker room talk that we all have when we're drinking the 10% margaritas at the thing.
Thanks, Myron.
Yeah, and you and your vegetarian friend, and and yeah, it sucks because you guys, that's what will help spark more. I wish there was more like you guys got together and posted like, all right, I'm kicking Keegan's ass this weekend and posted that. I mean, dude, you would fire it up.
But I think that's the exciting part that has to happen. And I also put it on like, yeah, I've tried to get like Shannon, who did the series the last 3 years, that like they did, his team did a great job. And what I loved is they grew into it every year. Unlike what happened with Flo, they slowly put more investment from their own side, you know, like getting a side by side hooked up with a gimbal and maybe too much.
Yeah, getting the GS. Yeah. Yeah, all this stuff. Yeah.
But I was like, you guys are missing the like true story fight. Like you'll follow someone until you don't think they're going to do well and you'd stop following them. Like that's the point to like, they're going to do something fucking rogue.
I know.
That's the moment.
It is. I feel like that is the, I have watched a little bit of the series. I got bored because it was just all rainbows and butterflies. Yeah. And I'm like, no, dude, I want to see the dude crying, pissed. I want all of that.
So last year, I've told the story all the time, but I was second in the Grand Prix. I'd made this crazy comeback and Cole was 3 points ahead of me, 3 points behind me. And all he had to do was beat me by 3 spots. And there's like 15 guys left in the race and I flat badly. Plug it, all the air starts coming out and I like keep plugging it. I'm plugging it and peeing at the same time because I'm like, this is going to be a hell of a race back if I come back. The ATV is right there. And then they leave. They never come back to me again. I rode back into the race and finished third. They never caught any of the story. I finished in the podium overall. I finished in the podium in the race. And I was like, maybe it's the fact you don't have enough cameras out there. But I was like, you missed the actual – I was like, it doesn't – it's me in this story. But the race is not always where the race is. The excitement has to be that there's a race, there's something happening forward and backward from that main event. And, you know, helicopters helped a lot with that because you can capture things very quickly up and down.
Yeah.
But I just like, there's the adversity and the like, the shit talk is what is needed in this sport right now.
Yeah. And I think in all of it, but I don't know. I'd like to say that I could do a better in a sense, but it is a tough thing. And what I thought even when doing the podcast, getting everyone to agree on that, because I feel like a lot of people, a lot of certain positions are just like, oh, we got to be positive or whatever it is. And it's like, I get that, but like there could have been a positive twist of the negativity, if that kind of makes sense, right? If you use it properly.
And my point is also like people in the last 3 years, I think we talked about this in the Canyon shoot also, like they don't want to be sold. They know, we know things now. I was like, when I talk to someone, I was like, if I'm with a company, it's honest. I was like, for the company also, if you're going to tell me to post 24 times a year, I'm not going to do it. I post 25 times a year total. It's not organic. It doesn't work. It won't sell shit for you. But I was like, identity with brands and being a part of something and helping people, education, inspiring, motivation, like that shit is so easy to bring in. And I don't need to be.
Guys in cycling have a lot more freedom to do that compared to
gravel does.
Right now, yeah. I don't know if it's going to change, but
it will.
It's a little bit changing, I would say. But outside of that, dude, the bigger ones, they don't fucking, it's brutal. Yeah.
And I'm sure, I would say probably Payson's the only one under like a real microscope with Red Bull right now because they've written contracts and been about things for a lot of people. But like, I think for us, and I'm trying to steer my company that I, the companies that I work with in the same way. Like if anybody's going to hire development writers, I want a say in how and how we're going to do that because you're not hiring
athletes. Well, what I hate is like, so what you're doing, which I think is fucking awesome and that always needs to be done in some scale with your athletes, marketing and everything is I've seen that and people take that wrong and be like, he's hard to work with. Yeah. I don't know if you've heard that from, I'm not saying you are, but I'm just saying someone, I've had it down the line where I've wanted genuinely to make a better video. And they're like, no, dude, you're hard to work with. That's why we didn't want to do it.
It's funny. I hadn't. And last week, my girlfriend came home. She had met with an unnamed person. And the person was like, I actually really like Alexi. Everyone hates it. Or everyone thinks he's hard to work with. And I was like, probably am. Like, I'm the eldest of three boys. And I say my mind. I was like, even if it's blunt, like what's, I don't know.
That's why we get along, dude.
But I'm also very, my point of that to people also is if you're going to say that and care about the way companies make moves, you have to be loyal to that company as well and talk about why you're doing something to be the same. If I were to say, okay, Envy, let's replan what we're going to do for the next 3 years, how this is going to look. And then I take a contract that is three times bigger and I just follow the money. That's great. Envy's not going to harm me wrong. But that's going to continue down the line. You have to be loyal to what you're working with and how you're working with people. And that I think is for gravel right now. It's validation of results is really important. And then after that, it's like, it's truly being a human because that's what sells product and is actually quantifiable.
Well, it seems interesting. And I'm sure you've seen, I don't know if you've seen, like, you know, they always have that one bar, that guy who does the video of the hot to crazy chick bar graph, right?
So good.
Well, that guy also did a video, I think it was him or someone else, did a video of that, of like in the workplace of like why we have these, why toxic people get above higher than the actual people that are genuine or behind the brand, you know? And I hate to see, like, because there's a genuine authenticity that will help sell products, like you're saying. And maybe, I don't know, we're somewhere down the line. It's just I don't know. But it does suck that people that want to do that, like you or me, or I don't know who else, we'll just say Vernon and stuff like that, they want to have this authenticity and understand that it is a process to get to there. You can't just slap a sticker on it and go. And I just, it's like, you know, they have the verified thing on Instagram. Maybe it just needs an authenticity fucking verified thing. You know, I don't know, but it does, it does suck. The people that do want, I feel like the people that want to be authentic get shitted on at certain moments.
For sure. And they also fail at certain times because it's easier when you're not sticking your money in the ways that are quantifiable in certain ways.
Yes.
Like, it's hard to put your money where there is never been money. And that's exactly what gravel has become. Someone decided, and then it became a bidding war, right? I don't know who it was. Specialized Giant Trek. Someone decided.
I would say Lifetime maybe brought that on because of this.
Yeah, Lifetime made it happen, but someone decided someone's going to get paid a lot.
Yeah.
Because we went from like me being stoked. It doesn't matter. I made $5,000 on Canyon for the whole year.
I would say I've never heard of Canyon paying that great.
No.
I'll go with that.
My point is also the evolution of gravel. It wasn't like it was like, oh, okay, two times, three times. It's like 10 times. Like prove yourself, wow, that we think that result is valued to us and we want to be in the gravel space. And a lot of it is I think smart companies knew very early that you weren't going to be able to buy winners forever in gravel. The money was going to get too expensive with the amount of depth we have in the sport. Again, five guys have $1,000.
But then I would also say, I don't know what Keegan makes, But does Santa Cruz owner utilize that guy?
Yeah.
The dude's a fucking
king. They're too big. If I sit down and I look at you as Keegan, I would say Keegan's with the wrong company. I would say Sarah Sturm's with the wrong company.
Yeah.
And it's not against the companies. I think Specialized makes spectacular bikes. Santa Cruz makes great bikes. They don't have the resources. They have to hire someone that gets paid $65,000 a year to manage Keegan. That's how good he is. They need to have someone who's creating content around it, who's talking about it, because it's not Keegan's job. Once he does his posts, it's not him. He did his race. He talked about it.
Well, that's where it comes to this uniqueness. That's when you get to the higher level sports, they basically do. I mean, you know, all the Lawrences and Supercross and the Kobe's in basketball, they all have the most successful ones have their own management company that has content creation in it. Yeah.
We're not at that level right now.
No, you guys aren't. No.
But I think there's a lot of companies that fumble it. I would argue like
100%.
Cannondale is lucky they have EF and Rafa, because Lachlan's stories would go unseen without them.
Well, I feel like they kind of talk like they're not going to get Cannondale or get money. Like when they did, you seen the behind the scenes thing. Yeah. And I was like, man, they got some of the sickest looking fucking shit out here. How could you not? Like, you got to figure out something with them. Maybe they did take a pay cut. I don't know, you know. Yeah.
But it's always hard because I think it's so – people look at one side and they look at money, and that's right now when things struggle, that's where they go to. But it's not like it's – I don't believe this will sell us products. And my – like, not to always make this about me, but it is my podcast. You brought me on. But like when I won't name the other company. But
God damn, I love this shit.
I'm just giving you outtakes for Instagram. It's all that matters.
No, this is perfect. This is perfect.
But,
no,
when I first came into the sport and I was like, I left the road. This is the year I saw you and I was negotiating things. I was talking to Envy and I had been using their wheels on Kenyas and I was talking to another company. Envy offered me $0, nothing. And the other company offered me $8,000. And I went with Envy because of exactly what you said. You can't verify authenticity. You have to feel it. Envy had a brand that was going to get stronger. If I did what I thought I could, that is where there was value. The other company was going to leave in a year because they realized they couldn't.
To be fair, we blew out two wheels, non-Envy wheels on the shoot. So that's a big push towards Envy. I get it.
To be fair, we did it not riding bikes.
Yes, the first two of the three that we used, we thought they were happening during riding bikes. We just happened to find out that Dodge Ram trucks blow out wheels if you put them on there wrong.
I forgot about that. I look every time where the exhaust pipe is on the truck now. Every time
fucking
I look.
Ruined. I'm ruined. But all right. Well, then let maybe. Okay. So you've seen the new. Let's change a little bit. The UCI shit that's came out. Okay. Okay, explain to me, if I wanted to go race Tour de France tomorrow, I would have to collect X amount of points?
You can't.
Or no, I can't. I can't, but do you have to collect points as UCI points to go? Or
so you have to have, as a rider, you can't physically. You have to be
contracted. But I mean, you can get on a team.
Yeah, you have to be contracted to a team, and those teams have points based on their riders. So let's use Tadej Pogačar right now and Jonas Vingegaard. Those guys are valuable because they win, but they're also valuable because their points. Their points, just those two, or Remco, are enough for the team to stay and not get relegated.
Yes.
If anyone's watched Ted Lasso, right, trying to be relegated, like there's teams on the back of the World Tour who are always fighting to stay in the World Tour. World Tour means you get invited to all the biggest events, no questions asked.
Okay.
If you don't, say you have, you're just underneath the World Tour, you're in a continental team. You can still get invited to the Tour de France, but there's only three wild cards, and you're most likely not going to of all the continental teams in the world.
Okay, so that makes sense. So then that's why what we're seeing in the World Cups now with XC, we're almost replicating that system.
It's sad, but I think the UCI knows. I think the first time they really got scared is gravel. They thought they missed the boat, in my opinion. And I think it's opened up this whole thing where they know they need to make it into a system that works for them. World Cup is growing, and they don't control it as much as they do the road.
Does this come down to the – I'm sure you've seen the recent Blevins and the post – or they did their whole thing on Velo News, I believe. I'm sure you – okay. Yeah. So the – like they know that they fucking – that they have us over there, so fuck the U.S. kind of attitude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you can control that, right? I mean, that's the thing. At some point, it gets to this, the same as like Tade's contracts and buyout clauses. The UCI as a whole now, you couldn't even try to, there's no way of moving them. They own the sport because they control the biggest races that everybody knows. If you went and said, hey, we're going to do the tour, we have all the sponsors that are going to come, no one cares a shit if you name it something else.
Yeah.
If you name it Tour, makes sense. Like maybe you've called Tour de Trump nowadays, they go over, but you know what I mean? Like
it's, you got to do what you got to do. You know?
But it's the same in cycling. Many people don't know, but if you want to like compare road cycling, why the downfall of Tour de California happened, it's because they tried to go World Tour. They wanted to guarantee that all the World Tour teams were going to be over here. And it means there's more points in the line, all that stuff. But what it does is raise their costs as a race. Drastic.
Yeah, I'm sure it was crazy, right?
So they went from having a race that was like very well run in nice hotels and like they could do it because let's say the cost was $3 million. It's probably more than that. It probably went from 3 to 15 overnight to run because you got to pay for all the World Tour teams to come over because there's different levels of what you have to pay for as a UCI race.
Really? You have to pay for the teams to come?
Yeah. And a lot of those races, like let's use
the teams don't pay to be in on though? Really? Because like it's $40,000 to have a team and
some teams pay to come, but they're the lower teams. The teams pay to register. That's what I think the XC teams are talking about, right?
Okay.
But when you're going to a race, that is how, because it's a 3-week race, right? It wouldn't be sustainable.
Yeah.
So the race is in charge of figuring out their deals with tourism boards, their deals with plane companies, with hotels, so that they, like the Tour de France is probably some of the shittiest French hotels you've ever seen.
I've never gone. Yeah. I've heard it's pretty fucking sketch.
But it's not like you're staying in 5-star chateaus every evening. You know, you're
guys got great buses, okay?
Great buses. You do feel like a rock star for a second, but it's, you know what I'm saying? It's such a, there's a comparison, but it's also like, it's hard to always, everything always looks greener. And I think a lot of times, you know, I don't know. I think the cross-country community.
What do you think is going to happen with it?
I wish the cross-country community was fighting back a bit more.
But I feel like they kind of are. Like everyone I've had on the podcast, I've said some stuff. I mean, I know you don't listen to
because
we're janky, but.
It'd be Chris convincing Specialized to say, hey, I'm going to go race the Grand Prix this year.
Yeah.
And if he's paid by Specialized, he's not paid by the races.
Yeah.
The companies decide. And the World Cups, the problem is you get to a point where if enough people left, you just devalue the world champion, right? And that sucks. That's not fun for anybody. But that's what the UCI holds in all these categories. They hold what the true world champion is. Those jerseys can't be given out by anybody else.
Ah, the fucking, I don't personally care about that. I mean, I don't know. I genuinely love watching the XC races in short track.
Yes, they're just
so
fun.
They are. I would love to make that in the US that way. I've been told from promoters that have UCI points here how fucking expensive it is and how much it is. And it's quite interesting. I don't know. I'm bummed. I want it here. And I don't know.
It's funny though, because you'll talk to both. Like if you ask Chris would probably tell you that he wants to dabble in the US.
Yes.
You ask Riley Amos. Riley kind of wants to, but Riley loves mountain biking. He doesn't give a shit about gravel.
Yeah. I don't think he'd be a gravel guy.
Not at all. You couldn't pay him to do it. Yeah. So it's like, he'd be like, cool.
But he's also younger, I guess you could.
Yeah, but him and the whole crop of guys, like when they come to like my home race, Iceman, it's like an hour and a half in northern Michigan. When they come, it's always fun talking to them because it's like you come from such different stratospheres, even though it's the same damn sport. And they just want to play around on their mountain bikes. They don't care about the racing side. They do. They want to be competitive. Riley wants to win his world championship, but he wants to tail whip. He wants to look cool in the air, like all the shit.
But I feel like Blevins was like that. Now Blevins, I would say, has a more of a brain on that. And maybe that's why he's saying with the others.
I mean, you're never going to take away Blevins' skills, right? Like that still exists. He'd still show off the steez in a gravel race.
For sure. I mean, it's got to be tough for him who used to dominate a Keegan.
Yeah.
And then come over and get dominated by King. I don't know if dominated would be the...
He won Little Sugar.
Yeah, okay, but...
Keegan was tired at the end of a season.
Yeah, it was Keegan. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's had his chances at the BWR in Tucson. He had his chance at sea otter and stuff. So I guess a little bit rough. And then I'm sure I bet they know how much they each other make.
Yep.
And he's like, well, why am I getting on a plane, spending half my life in Europe for the year? You know, there's got to be something there, right? And
yeah, and I think it's funny because I get both of it, right? Like, I've had a lot of people ask me, like, would you go back to the world tour if someone offered you a contract? And part of, like, the athlete inside of me would want to say yes to validate that, like, what we're doing is real.
Yeah. Right?
Like,
how do you feel, like, stamina-wise compared to, like...
What I've lost, because I do road nationals every year that I have, at least. I've lost just, like, that quick punch. Like,
yeah.
The 10-second, 15-second, like, that you just race a lot. We don't race enough here, you know? I do like, I used to do 60 race days a year. Now I do like maybe 15.
And the racing's different. So then when you come to Unbound, I mean, I feel like you guys are pretty bullish out the gate now.
Yeah, we ride hard,
but it's nothing like the tour level or something. Word.
No, I was at Road Match this year and I was like following Brandon McNulty around who like won Tour of Romandy and is a, you know, for us at the Olympics in the road, he's always up there. And he's still like, Brandon is not winning anything. He'll win occasionally the smaller races, but he's not winning the tour. He's not winning the Tour of Italy. He's not up in the big grand tours. And he would like I used to, he'd see a group, you know, 10 seconds up the road. You want to close the gap and like, you go. And like the racer inside of me knows how to do it. I just go. And I did like three times and I was like, this race is 5 hours longer. I'm not going to make it. And to be fair, like road nationals, the last couple of years has been like hellishly hard. And like what I, this reason I go back, it's like a gladiator. Like I think this year was we had 50 miles to go and there were less than 30 guys left in the race.
Oh really?
And I love that shit. Right. Cause it's just like, if you're not in, you're out.
Yeah.
But it's, I don't know. You need to find a way to like do that, but also still race gravel. That'd be the goal. I wish I could just go race on a road team. Like Lachlan, if he's still racing like pure road and he wasn't so like long adventure focused, he'd have everything perfect in my opinion.
So what if them boys from Tour de France came over and did Unbound?
See, that's where you skew things. It takes so long to learn how to race Unbound. You got to go and be humbled.
Because of the mud, shit. Let's just say it was like this year.
To plug a tire, like you got to be able to plug a tire. Amount of races I finished.
You're telling me they don't know how to plug a tire?
No.
What?
No. Dude, I didn't change. Okay. I barely changed tubes when I was in the World Tour.
That blows my mind right there.
Yeah. The speed of things.
So
they have the energy to do it. That's not the question. But if they have any mechanical of any kind, they're
out.
Yeah. Gone. Never come back. So
they almost need to do like a shorter one. One would you recommend they come race? I mean, maybe. So there's no, you don't think that there's a chance just because the self-supported situation or.
There's a chance if they just like get lucky. But like it's everything. It's like Unbound is like, how do you plan out these two feed zones you're going to see? Like Keegan and Russell 2 years ago changed the game. They carried flip phones. They texted Myron and Chris.
Are they not allowed to have cell phones when you race?
Or? They just didn't want to like, they just got a second phone they didn't care about.
What? In case they lost it or what? I'm just confused.
Yeah.
What?
It's lighter, lost it. Yeah.
Wow.
No, I don't actually, now that I say that, I feel like one of them had a flip phone. Anyway. But it's also like the feed zones are chaos. It's just you can't know how that stuff works without doing it.
What? I'm also – okay, so to me, I would just give you a Garmin GPS tracker, and then I would know where you're at as the pit guy. Why would you need to
– It's saying, hey, I got a flat. I'm rolling, but I need a back wheel. Hey, we're not going to spray my bike off. Hey, we're not stopping. Like there's so many contingencies I have going into a feed zone like that. That's like, if this, then that, if that, then this, because you don't know the conditions.
Feed zones have been controversy.
I love it though.
Yeah. Okay. So then, I mean, minus someone having a flat or non-flat. Okay. So that's been the fight. Are people not, I want to say Peter Sagan, but the other Peter,
Pete Statno.
Yeah, Pete's dead. Yeah, the eye roll for sure. Your old Canyon teammate.
Teammate and also still like we lived together in Girona for a year on the road.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. All right. I've heard some stories about that guy, but I don't really know him. But so, okay. Is he the one that causes the some people like him are causing this controversy of like, oh, they said they were gonna stop, but then they just fucking rip their legs off.
I don't know. I don't like, for me, stopping in a feed zone is such a like feeling. It's like, for example, let's use, if you're in a race and there's like, the race is blown to shit and there's eight guys ahead and the wind is going to come from those eight guys, you have 10 minutes to the next group. Like the group will say, kumbaya, let's have a pee. Like, yeah. I don't need to pee off the bike. I'm going to stop and have a nice piss. Yeah. That to me is like a feed zone. If you're going into a feed zone and the race is kind of decided and it's a lull, cool. Stop.
Yeah.
Fill up. Who cares? Most of these feed zones, though, it's a game. It's figuring out how you can carry your nutrition. It's figuring out how you can like carry it. Like Steamboat, for example, that you might like. You might maybe.
Oh, hey, wait. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Let's see. Hey.
We can cut that out.
Releasing shit out here. This guy. God damn.
Steamboat. You can't stop for water. You can stop for water, but no one can feed you. You can't take wheels. You can't take anything. So we're starting with 6 pounds of water on our bike, which is so stupid. I hate everything about it.
No way. What if you get a flat? What, I mean, what do you, you're just out. You blow a wheel, you're done?
No, you can pratchet yourself.
Duct tape. Wow.
But you can't. Okay. Hey, Willie. Austin doesn't want to hear you.
Pup's getting in, dude.
But it's he really cares a lot about feed zones, man. He's...
But he does.
I think deciding, anyone who says there's a decision before the race to stop, sorry, that's not true. Because you can't, what are we going to take it? We're like holding
our
hands. But
is that the controversy?
I think so. People are saying they feel the race should stop because we shouldn't carry 6 pounds. Because we shouldn't carry 6 pounds of water. Which I don't, okay. The logic I don't disagree with. But we're racing.
And you're so, racing. I don't. Yeah, that's so, why I'm a little bit confused. But there's this gentleman's agreement. I will tell you this. So like with enduro, I don't know if you've heard the recent drama at enduro is that it's gotten so competitive and the money is that these dudes are basically showing up the week before and training on all the trails, right? Yeah. And it's like, oh, with the gentleman's agreement is you're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to almost ride them blind. The only one day of practice, 2 days of practice, or whatever it is. So it's the controversy of this gentleman's agreement. And fuck that guy if he says he's whatever.
Yeah.
And my mind as a racer, I'm like, fuck that. I will go every day. Why would I not? Like,
yeah.
So is this what's kind of a similar subjective is like, someone said that they're going to stop longer for the water. We should wait. And then all of a sudden, whoop, they're fucking gone.
No, and my issue to like someone saying they're going to wait is the problem is just worse and worse and worse, right? So say you got a group of eight and the next group's only 2 minutes back. They get in, am I waiting for them now? Like, yeah, we just wait for the whole group to come back. So it's really like, that's the fun. And I think actually the exciting part of you get cameras of like being in the feed zones because everyone's doing it differently. Everyone's talking about it at Unbound. At this point, given the races we've had, you're stupid if you don't have a pressure washer.
You guys are pressure washing bikes. I'm like, really though? Like, but then, like, if you have a pound of mud, and it does help, but then...
Well, 2 years ago, wheels weren't spinning. A year ago.
Yeah.
Like, you literally, like... Shit. Like, I was...
Okay, that's where I come back to. What's the rules of this shit? Is there actual laid out rules?
It's
like
Fight Club.
That's what it sounds like. That's why when I hear someone get mad about it, I'm like, well, was it stated in the rules? No pressure washers. Like,
no. There isn't. The rules are added to or changed every year, but no. I mean, it's really like, what is the best, fastest way forward? And so I kind of like it, but like Unbound 2023, I remember, so you ended that first minimum maintenance road, and this is like, I would say 22 was more mud, but 23 was carnage because we entered this like muddy, couldn't ride it road for 2 miles. And I remember I'm at like the front of the race, like very near the front, and I'm with Russell. We are cleaning our bikes in a puddle. 9 miles into a 200-mile race.
And you're like, not looking good.
You're like, this can't be a professional sport right now.
It is.
There's no way.
And you signed up for it.
Well, I probably paid to enter.
You probably paid to enter. You probably did, dude. But oh, my gosh.
I think it's that's the shit that's actually funny and interesting.
Real professional right here, you know? I guess it just seems a little fucking Fight Club wildness going on here. I could see how the controversy kind of gets drawn up, but also it is Fight Club, man. Anything goes. Yeah. So
I think the main rules that go mostly between a lot of races is you can't litter. So like food wrappers also, but you also can't ritter, like, if you have a pack in like a steamboat, like a self-supported race, you can't empty that pack and throw it to people in the feed zone. If it's if you start with it,
only
you gotta
at steamboat, but what about Lifetime?
Trying to think of other races. Other races you can't throw anything unless you toss it into a feed zone. So only in the two feed zones.
Okay. In the feed zone.
But it's just specific into each, right? And so other than keeping what you start with in certain races and not.
Is there a rule against changing bikes?
Yeah, you cannot. A frame has to be the same. Everything else can change.
What about if you crack a frame?
No. You got to finish on that frame.
Really?
Or if you don't finish on that bike, then you don't get it.
Are they actually checking numbers?
Most of the time. I think there was in the female field, I forget who it was, there was someone who finished on like a spectator's bike. And
wow. I'm
yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, no. And they were like, this is weird, but yeah, this is in the rule book here, and you didn't finish the race. And it's always weird with that kind of stuff, because you're like, you're 25th, right? You're not racing.
Is this Unbound, you said?
No, I think this is the Rad.
What's that? I don't know.
It was the fifth Grand Prix race this year.
I mean, if I'm doing Unbound, I'm fucking 195 miles in and I need to borrow the spectator's bike to finish. You were fucking scored me. I'm so sorry.
You get three letters, Austin.
I do not care, dude. I don't care. There's no DNF. There's no DNQ for that. I am finishing that, okay? You can dock me a position. That's it. No way. Yeah. Pretty wild. Is Lifetime the actual sanctioning body? Is there even a sanctioning body?
No, Lifetime. There's a collaboration with like USADA just for doping. So we get tested.
So you guys do get tested.
Yeah, it's only in competition. So not
is that the one that Lance passed every time?
Yep.
How much? Okay, all right. How much is that going on? Because we had that talk about.
I don't think there's anything. I don't think there's enough. It's not saying there's enough money. I don't think there's enough reason for people to dope right now. And there's not enough people that you couldn't hide yourself. If someone went from being, hey, I finished 18th the last couple of years, and I finished fifth this year. Okay, what changed?
I don't know. You did
good job.
Just saying, you know, Big Sugar was just going to, you know, I'm going to point that one out.
Dude, I got dope tested. No, but it's like it's such a... I think it's more of a scare tactic right now. Like dope control costs as much as live stream.
Yeah, no,
like,
it's crazy.
It's insane. Like I think it's 25 grand per race just to have USADA there in competition test, not including all the stuff. So I don't know. It's only in competition. It's like random. I think it's the winner and then two random spots, male and female. So like it's a third and a seventh.
So it's not an issue yet.
No one's been caught. I think that's when it becomes an issue. I think more emphasis is put on it when someone's caught.
When someone's caught. Well, that'll be what. And so when you do a USADA deal, do you hand over the rules to them if they are caught? So they are banned for like it?
Yeah, that would go to USADA. Hand out the, but I'm sure that's in our contract with Lifetime too. Is anything like every contract I sign, Envy or Factor or anybody, it says if you anti-doping, there's a clause.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well,
any like it can be anything. Like not this would happen, but Envy could show up at my door with a drug tester and say, hey,
checking you for the not the drugs, were they?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, those drugs. But I mean, I don't know. That might help you.
I'm a gravel racer. I make a lot of money. I got a metal credit card now, so I can really get clean lines.
Metal credit card. Dude, everyone with an Apple card has a metal credit card, okay?
Not that shit, man.
Yeah, all right. No, go. What do you got? You got a better card now? What do we got?
We're getting stupid. We're getting silly at this point.
For sure. Okay. The one thing about... we were talking about is basically so, and this is the talked about. They're doping so much in the tour stuff that they can't even do a full night's rest. They have to wake up in the middle of the night because their blood gets so thick that they have to ride.
That was back in the 80s and 90s, but yes,
not anymore.
No, I don't. It's not possible with the testing's gotten good enough and infrequent enough and random enough that it's impossible to. But
really,
microdose. Right. So you're not having to do this thing. But now I'd say
you say microdose, we're talking mushrooms.
You wish. No. I did hear a lot of guys did that at Leadville, but I wasn't part of that. Anyway.
I know a guy.
Yeah. It's just taking minor doses that honestly probably you see much less change other than probably in your blood or little tiny infinitesimal changes. But that's all that's available now. Because right now. I'm sure there's eight areas, but there's enough money that people are finding ways around. Cycling's a hard enough sport. I think any endurance sport is where you're going to see most drugs. Like, we see it in every sport. It's not talked about like cycling. And so to me, that was the biggest issue, is that it becoming a cycle, right? Of like, are you taking some kind of performance enhancing drug, even if it's just caffeine? Are you taking 600 milligrams of caffeine and then you can't sleep, and then you take a sleeping pill, like, and then you go around in this cycle back and forth? Even if it's not illegal, it's finding those things that were, that you're, are USADA or anti-doping is supposed to be about being unhealthy, right? Our 1980 Olympic team blood doped, and it was legal, and it was like the cutting edge of science. Nowadays, we, for some reason, we think that's not. So
it's still cutting edge of science if you think about it. You know, it is. That's all I'm saying. And if you're beating the system.
And to me, that's the line, right? I mean, so the easy way of saying it is no needles. But I honestly, like, I don't want to blood dope because I don't like needles. But theoretically, I think anything your body produces should be available. Ketones, all that stuff, right? That's, we're finding ways to manufacture and create and use science to make our bodies faster.
Yeah.
Why are we taking, like, why is someone taking a 200 milligram caffeine gel, right? Like, it makes a difference. It's the same drug. So to me, that's the difference. And I think you slowly see that change with anybody. People get curious. Someone takes acetaminophen, or they take Advil, right? Or they take something else. And then it leads to like, oh, well, that felt good for me. And it's the same thing with higher drugs. Like, I think when we talked, like, there's always bigger painkillers in the cycling when I was there. Nothing was illegal, but it's bigger. And you see some guys that like hated it because they felt like they're like in the middle of the road, like they couldn't feel anything. And there's some guys who loved it.
I mean, okay, so you think that this microdosing, does it actually help, or is it mental more? Because at that point,
I don't know. I would have to imagine people are doing it, going through the chaos. It does help. You could probably find it. There was an Austrian skier. There's an Austrian doctor who got caught blood doping in like 2018. I was living in Austria, so why I did all this research. It's very interesting. And there was a skier who did like a true tell-all, like no omerta, no anything. And it was very, very interesting to me because he talks through like he was a top 10 skier consistently all the time. And he started to blood dope. And so they took, I forget the name, 4 bags of blood out in the off season when he does it, when his body can just replenish it naturally. Put him in the freezer, and as he'd do camps, he would put him back in. And you let your body will always come back down to a normal level, but you could train at a higher level while they're in.
Yep.
He was never a top 5 skier because he was like, I was always nervous at the races that I would be caught. And so there's this thing, if you have the ability, like Lance did, right, to take that part of yourself out, there's an element to it. You can train harder than you do. But you have to be able to also completely compartmentalize that.
Yes.
You got to compartmentalize that. Otherwise, it won't matter. You'll be there and you'll be like, I'm not going to make the move.
Yeah. So, I mean, we talk about it in moto. It's the guys, let's say you're Carmichael, you're any of them, you're James Stewart. Even if they didn't have that, they still would win.
Yeah.
They'd still win. Because there's something unique about winners, I guess you could say.
100%. Yeah. And I'd say the same thing of like Lance is a great example, but even Keegan, right? Keegan is a winner. It took him finding the sport that fit him best. The World Cup was never for him. He started too far back. He was born in the wrong country for World Cup to be for him. He has the engine for it, but it's more been that he also, like, at this point, I'll point my finger at almost anyone in the Grand Prix. He's an intimidation factor. People just like, oh, my legs hurt. I'm not going to go now. Well, that's the race win. You're letting it right away. It's proven. So,
I think it's going to have to, I mean, now that there's 5,000 online for the weekend, change?
I hope so.
No change. I mean, there'll be some 17th place guys just fucking Hail Marying it.
I really, really hope so. Because, this year at Leadville, I came back at 1 a.m. before the race, but 2 years ago at Leadville, we were at the bottom of Columbine. I didn't feel good. It's the penultimate climb of the race, an hour long. Keegan went, and I went after him. I didn't feel good. I felt like shit. Nobody came. And everyone's like, oh, I'm pacing the climb. What are you, pacing to get second? I don't understand that. So it becomes this factor of being like, well, he's too strong, so I can't do it. And that is also a winner's mentality, knowing you're strong enough to dominate the race. And the way Keegan's done these races, he's dominated the race. He is the strongest, but he also reminds everybody constantly that he's there. He's a force to reckon with. That's the same thing Lance did. People want to make fun of him. Keegan's not an asshole like Lance was in the race, but like, he'll let you know he's there. He'll let you know he let you go. He'll let you know he'll take a look. If you go, he'll chase you down purposely. And he'll make sure you see him on the front. And that whole side of it, it's a winner's mentality. And it, there's a lot to be said
for that.
100%.
Definitely.
You can't really teach that. It's a feeling.
No. Yeah. You can learn it, maybe?
You can learn parts of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I still think there's a part of you that just wants to be that person.
Okay. So then Keegan living at elevation half of the year or whatever, and then sleeping in a tent. What is that? That has to help.
Yeah. I mean, I live in Boulder. I live at elevation, theoretically.
And it's going to help. It's going to obviously help.
I think it helps. My biggest, so Leadville being the outlier. Leadville's above 10,000.
And you're at the moon, okay? Yeah, let's just get real.
That one is crazy. And I think there's like Keegan is the best cyclist above 8,000 feet that I've ever met. That doesn't mean anyone couldn't get beat. But the point is, like, I think growing up at altitude, your body is different.
Oh, yeah.
So for me, moving here, it took me like a year and a half to feel normal at altitude, just to train normally. Like a year, like a full year and a half to like settle in, normal numbers, normal heart rate, feel good. My biggest thought process is it actually makes more of a difference racing at altitude than it does going down. I don't think you get much benefit, for me at least, being at altitude and going down. Yeah.
Yeah.
I really need to be down at sea level and like get used to more air. And like, because
you feel more of a difference when you go and do Leadville.
Yeah, but you keep cracking into these big things. So theoretically, when you go down to sea level, in my opinion, or a lot of scientific opinion, your body is so good at dealing with a lack of oxygen. But when you get more oxygen, what you do is you just blow your legs out in the first effort, and your body's like, oh, we got nothing left. Because your heart can keep up with it, but then your legs can't do it. They haven't processed that much lactic acid. So for a lot of people, they go down from altitude and they go to sea level and they're like, la-di-da-di-da. Like, you got to do some hard workouts, like, get your body ready. And so being at altitude, there's pluses and minuses. To me, going down, you can still have a gain being more adapted, but you have to get used to it for sea level. And then from here, it's just nicer to be able to go to other races and not worry, like a steamboat or a rad that are, you know, at that 5,000 to 7,000 feet.
So then you don't lose it after X amount of days?
You do. But you just don't, I don't think you lose that much. I mean, like, I think generically, you probably lose every 3 days, you lose more. Probably double.
Do you have a tent?
No. I am not a numbers guy. I've never taken vitamins. I don't like simplicity is my goal in life. I haven't owned a car, Austin, since I moved to Europe at 16.
So you don't have,
I date girls that have cars. I have a car. I just say. Sophie, my lovely girlfriend Sophie, has a very nice Jeep.
And then whose Sprinter van's in the back? Come on, you know?
Yeah, it's not mine.
It's not mine. No way.
It's not mine.
Okay. Don't yank my chain. So so then you're not like one of the guys that has the, you know, what's the patch and then it tells you all the data when you whoop. No. Yeah, whoop.
No,
yeah.
Whoop or core or all those. No.
Something, yeah, no.
I've never tracked HRV, I've never tracked core temperature. I like occasionally when I'm sick, I'm like, what's my resting heart rate? But like,
what's wrong with you?
The theory I trust is if I'm feeling sick, I trust my Oma, my Dutch Oma, I eat blackstrap molasses.
Does your Instagram say you're an athlete? Because this doesn't sound very athletic.
I don't think it does.
It does. Dude, you're hurting people right now. You have no idea. Like, anyone that listens to this is going to be like, are you serious that he literally doesn't – none of that. So you don't train with watts or anything?
Yeah, I mean, since I left the road, I've been very, like, natural.
Okay.
I guess the point. I have power meters. You'll see, like, depending on the race and how I'm feeling, I won't race power. Like, Leadville the last 2 years, didn't race power. Schwamm again, didn't race power. Randomly – like, it really depends on how I think I'm going to pace or what I'm going to use. But, like, I know my body. If you don't know your body, you're not going to be a bike racer. So it's fun to look at on the back end. But, like, I think there's so much inconsistency with power meters nowadays that it's also just a number. Like, I don't want that number to tell me that I can't go harder. I can go harder.
Until you are sponsored by a power meter company.
Shimano makes a lot of great products.
Just saying. I'm kind of blown away because I have some friends that are just, that's life.
I think power is super important. I don't think it's life. Like,
yeah.
When I moved from the road, we set out, like, what does a given 7 days look like all the time? I've worked with the same coach since I was 14 years old. And at the beginning, it was just like, you know, play hockey instead of cycling or go run instead of cycling. It was really just like separating sports because I wouldn't listen to my parents. And given 7 days, any day of the week for like a normal training year for me, Monday's completely optional. I can go screw off, drink beers, do whatever I want.
That's why we're doing a podcast on a Monday.
I'm in an off season anyway. So this morning I had brie, pie, and eggnog for breakfast. So we're really peak.
The wiener dog definitely decided the diet.
Yeah. Dude, he loved all of that. So Monday completely off. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, some kind of block. Friday, super easy, chill, do whatever I want.
And you're not looking at anything.
Oh, I have power there. I have a coach. We do workouts, but it's like go ride 45 minutes, you know, medium hard. Like here's what it would be. And like occasionally I'll look at it and be like, cool. My mind and my power meter.
All right. Anyone who's listening, this is how you win Big Sugar. This is the strategy.
All I put on my Wahoo with Big Sugar is I said, whenever Keegan's not looking, attack. That's what it said.
Well, obviously it worked out. I'm just wild. Wow. I mean, but I guess everyone is different. Yeah. We'll preference with that. But I just thought all athletes like maybe did a little bit more than me.
Athletes.
Yeah. Okay. So maybe you missed your calling. It was enduro.
I just don't want to test it. I proved out all the courses.
Yeah, see, dude, you are an enduro athlete is what I just heard right there. What's a power meter? Wow. Okay. This is a deep, dude. We're all over the map right now.
This is my favorite. Could be better if we were in person.
Well, I tried to invite you to California, but you're just like, nah, dude.
You invited me when I got on the podcast. That doesn't count.
You don't like 65 degree weather and great trails. So I get it. Yeah. I mean, you probably have some good trails there, but yeah. But you got snow, right?
I love snow, though. If I could choose, I'd be a hockey player.
So you like to fight.
Yeah.
Isn't that just like part of if you're a hockey player, you have to be a fight person?
I never did boxing lessons, but a lot of my friends did.
So how many fights have you been in?
Only like three. And they're all like playful with friends on the ice. Only one I like properly.
I feel like to be a hockey player, you have to like to beat the shit out of people in a sense. Also,
I think it's the most honest like strength sport. I think it's the most it's yeah, you true get like
bonus points
man.
For beating the shit out of someone, God. Right?
Yeah.
So there's new rules in Lifetime. Well, shit, man. I mean, what have we not covered? I feel like we're all over the place. I'm still kind of fucking blown away. That's not your Sprinter van in the back right now.
It's not.
You just moved to the neighborhood with Sprinter vans?
No. It's a friend's Sprinter van.
Oh, okay.
I just moved in a new house. It's just not my, I don't drive.
Not yours. Yes. Okay.
It's
okay.
A friend's Sprinter van.
I was waiting for it to have the sponsors and the logos on the back. You were just, hey, look at this. Look at this.
I barely believe in like billboard sponsorship. Like for races, I believe in it, but like training, I'll ride an inline kit, like normal stuff all the time. I think it's more honest. If you see me.
Well, no, they were probably, you do that because we've all seen you ride a mountain bike and that's why you just don't.
You can still see if I have a dog on my back.
Yeah, that's the excuse.
The amount of people in Boulder that you will yell Willie's name and don't know my name is comical. No, yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
We'll be on we'll be mountain biking. You'll hear someone yell from the woods. A little bit, you can't. Right? You can't. My wiener's bigger than yours.
Yeah, jeez. It does work out that way. We'll let that one slide. All right. Well, this has
been great, been
interesting, and entertaining. And now I feel like I can be a lifetime athlete after hearing this information.
No power meters. Chance. You just gotta. No power meters. Just gotta intimidate Keegan. And
yeah, well, now we'll just let Keegan know you want to be a hockey player, you like to fight.
Keegan's afraid of the cold. Keegan doesn't go. All I need is Lifetime to put big refrigerators around all the races we go to, and Keegan wouldn't win anything.
No, just switch the dates. We'll just get some cold ones.
The entire series is happening in November, December.
Yeah, I'm out. I'm out even on watching that, producing it, shooting it, any of it.
Anyone who sees Keegan, just make fun of him. He can't ride outside below 60 degrees.
I don't know. No, that's bullshit. Because he literally posted a video yesterday of him riding in the snow.
Yeah.
Unless it's fake.
Probably had heated tights on.
He definitely looked like he had a pretty slick Rafa kit. It looked aggressive. You could barely just see his eyes.
He's the one that, like, he's got hand warmers in his back pockets. He's got toe warmers on. It's 55 degrees.
How is he not in Tucson right now? That's what I was going to message
him. He's like, leaving. I think Tucson? They leave around Thanksgiving.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. Okay. Yeah, so. Well, you got to get ready for 24 hours of El Pueblo, you know?
I know.
Which, how weird was it that we did it at the same time you did it, right? Yeah. Yeah. And such you guys won on your team, right?
No.
No.
I never won what anything.
I thought you almost won or you
I
got
do,
second?
I do it with like friends who I win the first lap.
Oh, you win the first lap. Yes. Yes.
I go really hard. That's all.
You were on that corporate team, right?
Yeah.
And Sophia just ended up not racing like a lap or two when you guys were in the lead, right?
Yeah.
Oh, it was a plan. It was a
plan.
Yeah, it was a plan. Sophia definitely planned that one.
Yeah.
She was like, you know, I would take down his average. Yeah. Right here. Wow.
I don't look. All at right, I don't dude. Look at my average. So.
Well, thanks for agreeing to do this, and now I have insight of what it takes to win Big Sugar. So, you're kind of fucked if I enter next year.
I don't
so.
Think we talked about Big Sugar, so you have no insight. But
oh, I got insight. I heard attack Keegan. Don't ride with a power meter and win.
Perfect. That's all.
Yeah.
That's all you need to do. He'll Keegan will start crying. You beat him three times. So.
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely going to happen. Yeah, sure. If you've seen the shape I'm in, yeah,
it's you want to list any names, people I can make fun of? Who's coming on next? Do you have any gravel athletes coming on?
We were going to do some stuff, but I think we have more industry guys. I will have Vernon on soon.
I have nothing to make fun of for Vernon, though. I know. Just, like, I wanted to give you a slap in the face just to start.
I mean, we could talk about that fucking place we stayed at, the crack house fucking RV park, which was wild. And where did you guys end up staying? Like, outside in a tent. And I was like, dude, we were going to get shanked at this fucking place.
You had the nicest truck I've ever been inside. So
I don't toy hauler. Believe that. I had this little truck and the Wi-Fi was hideous.
It's bad.
What we went through. Bad. The guy was throttling us every minute. Vernon couldn't even get any work done. We blew out two wheels. We ate like kings.
Yeah, we did.
Your friend, who was also, is he still Canyon? What happened to him?
Ryan.
What does he
still
do?
Canyon. Ryan. He doesn't race anymore. He's got two kids.
Oh, really? Yeah. Well,
we still run a project together.
I'm still going to give him some shit for telling us all that he was vegetarian, and then he shows up that he wants a steak.
Ryan's biggest, my favorite Ryan quote ever is we were in Wisconsin filming this project, and he went to the person at the hotel desk and asked if they had a non-dairy milk. And I was like, do you know where we are? They kill you for that. They kill you for saying that.
Dude, what? Yeah. Something's a little wrong with Ryan. There's a few clicks off on Ryan. There's a few clicks off. I'm not quite sure. I mean, I've never seen a vegetarian switch to steak so quick to meat like that when I brought those steaks. I was like, no, dude, you got one for me? Like, no, you said you're a vegetarian. I'm sorry, but I got you some salad.
I forgot about that.
Dude, he was like mad that I didn't have one when he told me he didn't want one. I was like, I'm sorry, man. But yeah, that was a wild trip. That was a wild trip. Two wheels. Man, that wasn't it dark on the ride back that one time?
That was dangerous.
The river crossing
was completely dark. Like we had no service. Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
we were
lived
riding on the side of a highway. We were really, we lived in no service too.
We did. And I think those were some of my favorite photos I've taken in my life. Like, I feel like we got some cool shit up there. It was weird that the motos came through on the same trail. Yeah. I don't know. To me, I was like, what the fuck is this? Yeah. It's like, yeah. Have you been back and rode that trail?
It was sick, though. I remember like descending that and being like, this is proper. I enjoy this.
Yeah. I would go back. I'm down to go back. Yeah. Let me get closer to you.
Austin was, he pretty much, all he would do is he'd take my bike, he'd show me how to do it, and then I would copy as quickly as I can. So I didn't forget it.
Stop it. You said that you couldn't jump, and I was like, all right, we're going to jump. And we found spots for you to manual, right? Like, you kind of manualed into the water.
This is a true, air quotes, manual.
It's something. We'll call it something, but it looked great in the photos. It
did. In the video and photos, it looked.
We don't fuck around. Okay?
I love it.
Yeah. So we had great times. I think we need another trip, somewhere.
We'll just FaceTime Vernon after this. Call him up. out of the blue. Hasn't talked to me in 5 years.
Vernon came and slept in the back of the motorhome. In the back of my motorhome is a garage. Okay, yeah, sounds weird. A garage with diamond plated floor. And he showed up with a mat like this thick to sleep on that. And I was like, Vernon, what are you doing? He slept on basically steel floor.
Yeah.
And it snowed one day when we got there, I think. And there's no heater back there. What a trooper.
There's people in our lives we have like that, you know, they can sleep anywhere. Like, they find a skate park, sick.
Vernon was a trooper. Vernon also helped me crush the rest of the margaritas, and we were a little tipsy. We were sending it.
It's what you need in life. That's like the perfect, it's how you shoot.
Yeah. I would do that shoot again, minus the wheels, but that'd be it. I'd redo it. Yeah.
Wasn't my wheel. And Envy never would have cracked under that pressure.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay.
500 degrees, Envy tests 500
You remember
degrees.
When we thought at one moment it was the altitude? We were like, no, dude, maybe it's the altitude why they're blowing these wheels.
I couldn't. Yeah. I remember standing on top of that pass being like, what in the f-? And I rode back down.
Oh, what? No, what? You rode back down?
Yeah.
Hold on. What?
You guys went up. And I rode back down to grab a wheel, to grab something.
I can't.
I was chasing after you guys afterwards, I remember.
I don't know.
And I have a KOM from it. Don't you worry. Strava can prove it.
You got a KOM there?
I was like chasing you guys down on e-bikes. You had started like 5 minutes ahead of me or something. No. I waited for Vernon to get back with a truck with a different wheel. That's what happened.
Maybe you guys that. Oh, shocked. Yeah. And then sunset. You had to climb and bring it to me. Yeah. As something like that. Yeah.
I was just.
Yeah. Watts, dude. Watts.
I didn't have a power meter, so.
And as a power meter, I know. It was a bike unreleased. That's why.
That's fair.
That's why. All right. Well, we definitely, I guess you want to come on when I bring another gravel guy so you can talk shit.
Yeah, just like if you're going to bring a gravel guy, bring me on for 2.5 minutes. I'll say like all the shit I know about him and like make fun of him for a while or her. And then I can be gone.
If you're really down, like I have no problem bringing you on for another one.
I'll say 90%. There's some people you'll bring on that I feel like I'll be too mean and make them cry. That's not good for anybody. But
well, I think we're going to do another Keegan and McTubbin one.
Oh, maybe, that's easy.
Maybe you hop in on that one. Maybe a Cole Patton one.
Yeah, I don't know if we could
break him out. You know, he's a little, I got to massage him in a little bit, you know?
Yeah. I can massage Cole. Yeah. Tobin, yeah. I mean, everything everyone needs to know about him. He's great with the ladies. Spectacular. I got so many stories from Europe. So many stories. Riding 60s in the dark, drunk in Europe. And everyone go watch him crash at Schwamigan on the start. Cyclocross racer, my ass.
Did he just break himself off good or
he
what?
He literally just like starts sprinting. There's such good like GoPro footage of it too, because Schwamigan's like 1.5 hour race. Everyone has on bike cameras. And he's like going and just completely straight over the front of the bike, like right up the hill. Oh, yeah. It's my favorite. Tobin.
I will find this video. Maybe I'll put it at the end of this video.
There you go.
Yeah. I like that.
Tobin's really good at riding bikes, guys.
Hey, he is world champion. What?
Single speed cyclocross.
Okay. That is something not to be fucked with. Okay.
He won a tattoo. Congratulations.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, he has that on Keegan. So that's all he needed.
Yeah.
You can't say Keegan's got a world championship. So
No. Tobin could probably pay me to help Keegan not win a world championship.
Jesus Christ, you guys. All right. Next podcast that I have a gravel guy on, I will call you. You're coming on. And maybe you'll just like not even show that it's you. You just talk shit in the corner. We'll say you're a gravel expert for your name.
So they only know if they listen to this episode. I like that.
Yeah, only if they listen to this episode. Yeah, we'll just change it. Gravel expert, just what there's expert. Yep, did it change? Yep, there we go. Expert is and we'll get that handled.
Can't
cool
wait.
Just hang out. I'm gonna just sign this sucker off. Thank you all for listening. We're 2 hours into this sucker. I had like 20 minutes before he got on because he's like, no dude, I don't want to come on. I want 2:30. I was like, no, it's okay. And yeah, and then Spencer, I'm pretty bummed, dude. You just totally missed out on this podcast, so you can go work on your day in the dirt skills and day to get hurt is what I call it. So yeah, episode 17, you all just listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify will have video and audio, and YouTube as well. And stick around soon because we're going to have some more info to release coming up about Insider. And check out the new website. All right. Give it a like. Do something. All right. Thanks.